Coming up on Golf Today, Bandon Dunes is 25 years old, and we have the guests to prove it this week. Find out why Bandon Dunes is a must-play and a must-stay. And Alison Corpuz won the U.S. Women's Open last year and got invited to play golf with a former president. Did the round ever come to pass? Alison tells all on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
PGA Tour returns to Texas in TPC Craig Ranch, where players compete in the tournament named after Lord Byron Nelson, all-time Texas legend, World Golf Hall of Famer, and gentleman. CJ Cup Byron Nelson begins Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavner, the senior writer. Great to see you. I haven't seen you since the Masters. How you been?
I've been great. Finally cured the post-Masters hangover. It feels like a really sleepy time in the world of golf, doesn't it, after Augusta National, and yet somehow remaining busy. Got a couple features we're cooking up for the PGA Championship, NCAA Championship is coming up as well. And now for 2 hours this week, thanks to Eamon Lynch vacationing in Montreal, I get to uncork some hot takes.
No doubt.
The rest of the week.
Great to sit next to you. And it may be a sleepy time. We have some news on this Tuesday, and not good news. One of the headliners this week will no longer be teeing it up. Will Zalatoris, know he's been through so much with his back. He's withdrawn from the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson will be replaced by Nick Watney in the field. Zalatoris has been putting together a strong season with three top 10 finishes, including a tie for ninth at the Masters Tournament. He recently released the following statement on social media, part of which read, "My back needs some rest and recovery. I'm ahead of schedule, according to my doctors, but unfortunately, the first 6 months back are the most important for the long-term health of my back. I need to be prudent to make sure I don't miss a big chunk of time again. I hate that a flare-up happened during one of my favorite weeks of the year, but we knew something like this was a possibility early on in my return to golf." With more from TPC Craig Ranch, we welcome in Rex Hoggan. Rex, great to see you, buddy. We know what Will Zalatoris has put his body through, including surgery. How much of a setback is this news?
Well, first and foremost, it's a hit for the field. He was the highest-ranked player in the field. He's a Dallas guy. I think there was going to be a lot of fans out here to watch him continue that comeback that he started last year in the Bahamas. I traded text briefly with his performance coach, Josh Gregory. He told me he was, quote, 100% fine. And as you pointed out, he said he just needed some rest. This sounds like off the top that it's kind of a schedule crunch. You look at what he has been through really the last few days. He played last week in the team event in New Orleans. Of course, he played the Masters. He played Hilton Head. We're getting into a very busy stretch. I think this was probably the prudent decision. Anytime you have a player that has gone through everything that Willie has when it comes to his surgery and the health issues that he withdraws, it's always going to send up some red flags. But it seems like on the surface, this is much ado about nothing.
Rex, with Zalatoris now out, the entire focus of the tournament, of course, turns to Jordan Spieth. He did not play in this tournament a year ago because of a wrist issue. It is still hampering him, at least to some extent. What's your level of concern when it comes to Jordan Spieth and how he's played so far in 2024?
I think when it comes to Jordan, I have concern, I have excitement, and everything else in between. You and I talk a lot about this, that I don't think there's anyone on the PGA Tour right now who is as entertaining to watch play golf as Jordan Spieth, simply because he has no unspoken thoughts. Everything on the golf course is being exchanged between he and his caddy, Michael Greller. And we actually referenced this a few weeks ago when I was in San Antonio for the Texas Open, and I had a chance to talk with Jordan just kind of about the idea if he's moving in the right direction. Does he feel like whatever changes he's working on with his team are working out? And he said he's having a hard time separate the results from the process. By that, the results simply haven't been there, but he feels like he's dedicated to the process. But it is getting to the point where you can tell he is aggravated.
Well, Rex, it's understandable. Jordan Spieth, one of the best players of this generation, has only two victories since 2017. Are we getting to a point where, you know, the aforementioned resume kind of outshines the where Jordan Spieth is right now, and he's not one of the best players in the world anymore?
Well, you look at where he is in the world ranking. He is 20th right now, and he is the only top 20 player in the field this week. So I still think he's keeping pace with some other players that are around him. But no, he's not that top five player that we saw pick a time, 2015, 2016, when he was in full flight and he was doing things that we really hadn't seen since Tiger Woods. And a lot of this stems from, as Ryan pointed out, that there were injuries and injuries that he continues to deal with. But I think the other half of this is he lost a lot of confidence over the last few years, first with his swing, then with his short game. It's going to take time if it ever comes back, because he always... He puts so much energy, so much emotion into being able to do incredible things on and around the greens. We were never surprised when he made a big putt or chipped in. Now he doesn't seem to have the confidence to pull that off, and I feel that that was a huge part of who Jordan Spieth was.
You mentioned the hit to the field earlier in this segment. Now just three top 30 players in the field at the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, which is not all that uncommon for these full field events on the PGA Tour. What's your sense of how this is resonating with golf fans, the split between the signature events, we know the best players are going to be competing, and these full field events, which offer an opportunity for the rank and file?
I think last week, the team event in New Orleans, the Zurich Classic, was a bit of an outlier because you ended up with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry doing really special things and winning in a playoff. And I think there was a lot of excitement around that. But it's hard to carry that momentum in when you have, as you pointed out, really just one top 20 player. Jordan Spieth is going to have to carry the flag this week. Now, we have seen earlier in the season, you've seen those events that are in between the signature tournaments, those events that are giving players an opportunity to play their way into the signature events. However, in this particular case, I don't know how much it's resonating with the fans, because you and I can talk about the Aeon Swing 5 and the Aeon Swing 10 and talk about how important it is to play well this week to get in to next week, the Wells Fargo, another signature event. But I don't think it's quite registered with the fans just yet.
Understandable if there's a bit of a post-Masters lull, I get it. How much of the onus is on the PGA Tour in the midst of these negotiations with the PIF, for example, to think outside the box, to keep trying to be innovative and to do things in a different way to keep those golf fans engaged?
I think pushing the envelope is really important, and we're seeing that right now. The comparisons between the signature events, the majors, and then the full field events, you do need to do something different. I think the PGA Tour, the players have acknowledged this. I think Max Homa has probably been one of the more outspoken players when it comes to this. I reported this a few weeks ago at Hilton Head that there was a player meeting. There was a player advisory council meeting, and Theo Epstein, the former Boston Red Sox executive, spoke to the players about the idea of trying to create a new product. It's what they did in baseball. We look at how much time they cut off the average baseball game. That resonated with the fans. It made the game seem a little bit refreshed. It made the game seem a little bit younger. That's what golf is trending to right now. And go to last week's news about the equity program. That has a lot to do with the idea that the tour wants to make every player believe that they're an owner of their own tour. So not only do they buy in and they remain loyal to the PGA Tour, but they also understand that they have to go out of their way to make the product better. And that's probably going to take some new thoughts and some new experiments.
The fans want it and need it in this era. Much more from Rex Hoggett from TPC Craig Ranch in just a little bit. We were talking about Jordan Spieth. We're going to take a look at the three-time major champ. He gets ready for a home game this week. Ryan Lavner missed the cut at the Masters. In fact, he's missed two of the last three cuts in the tournament that maybe means as much to him as any other golf tournament. Where do you see this prideful player who seems to be in a constant state of searching these days?
I think it was a month ago, the Valspar Championship, when Jordan Spieth said that he is having a, quote, weird year. Mm. And I think that was pretty apropos. You could make the argument, at least with some set of facts, that he was having a decent year. Remember Kapalua, the Century, kicking off 2024, had an opportunity to win that golf tournament. He was also inside the top 10, the Genesis Invitational at Riviera before he got to the 36th hole, made the sloppy double bogey there.
Yes.
Rushes, is not feeling well. Ends up getting disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard. He doesn't typically play well at the Players Championship. And so to me, that was the one that you can kind of dismiss. Then everyone gets excited once again when the Valero Texas Open rolls around. Spieth finishes in the top 10. And now he heads to Augusta National, a golf course that he loves like no other.
He can play it blindfolded.
He can play it blindfolded. The creativity, the imagination that he shows, it is a ballpark that is tailor-made for his particular skill set. And for him to miss the cut, I think, was really eye-opening. And to kind of go to your question with Rex, is Jordan Spieth just becoming an above-average PGA Tour player, a top 25 player,
right,
as opposed to the top 10, top 5 guy who he has been the majority of his career? I think it's a fair critique at the moment. I do think there is significant work for him to do in order to close that gap again.
You know, we're watching him with his longtime swing coach, Cameron McCormick. I sat next to Aaron Oberholzer on the set of Live from the Masters on Wednesday, and Jordan had a very similar setup. You're seeing him with two launch monitors there, a TrackMan and a quad, a Foresight quad, and Aaron Oberholzer put his hands in the air and saying, like, what are you doing on the eve of the first major championship with all this equipment instead of feeling shots, instead of being so concerned about the numbers and hitting a shot, looking at the numbers, hitting a shot, looking at the numbers. And AO almost lost his mind as if saying, you know, where is the artist that was Jordan Spieth instead of this engineer that we seem to be seeing week to week?
And when he went through that slump, and he remained the entire time with swing coach Cameron McCormick, he said he was getting too technical. And when he came back and he had that resurgence in form in 2022, he said he was trying to be more instinctual,
right,
trying to be more athletic. It seems like he's reverting back to the other tendency and being a little bit too technical and just trying to find it. I mean, he's basically searching at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, in good times and in bad, Jordan Spieth is a gift to the field on the PGA Tour, especially in Dallas, Texas. Before we go to break, I want to take a check on the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. The reason why this is so important, since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it all the way to the Tour Championship at East Lake. So if players finish in the Top 10, odds are they're going to make it to the Tour Championship. Stay with us, folks. Special week on the Oregon coast as Bandon Dunes celebrates 25 years. We discuss the impact this famed venue has had on the game when Golf Today returns. We're back on Golf Today. What a special week in the game as Bandon Dunes turns 25. Mike Kaiser's vision came to life with the help of architect David McClay Kidd. Spoke to him yesterday. The course opened in 1999 and it remains one of the most highly rated links courses in the nation. About the timeline, January of 91, Mike Kaiser bought 1,200 acres north of Bandon. Look what's happened since. Bandon Dunes opened, Pacific Dunes, Bandon Trails, Old Mac, Bandon Preserve, the Sheep Ranch, and in just days, Shorty's, a 19-hole par 3 course will open. When the course initially opened, a 29-year-old Josh Lesnick worked at Bandon as its first GM. Here he is photographed with Mike Kaiser and David McClay Kidd. Lesnick, now the executive VP of golf for Kemper Sports. He joins us now. Josh, great to see you. You had a great head of lettuce back in the day. I've always wondered, how did you first get connected to Mike Kaiser in the Bandon Dunes project in the first place?
Well, Mike and my father, Steve Lesnick, who was the founder of Kemper Sports, did a little bit of business together before Mike started Bandon. Mike had invested in some golf courses with us, and they worked together. And Mike did when Bandon became an idea in his head, he did a little bit of a competitive process to find out who was going to manage Bandon and work with him on it. And so our company, led by my father, made a presentation. I sat in on it. And, of course, Mike did end up selecting us to manage the property. And not too long after that, Mike called me and asked me if I was interested in going out to look at the property in Oregon with him. And the two of us flew out there, and that's really how I first met him, was sort of at that pitch, I guess you could call it, when we started talking to him about potentially Kemper Sports managing the property for him.
Josh, you're just 29 years old at the time. What were your initial impressions of the property and what kind of job was going to unfold there?
You know, it was interesting because, I mean, it's hard to imagine now, but it just wasn't that big a deal back then. It was sort of this dream of Mike's that all these golfers from the United States were going to play Lynx Golf over in Scotland and Ireland. And he thought if he could just find a piece of property in the U.S. and build that kind of golf, would they come? It was kind of an experiment. He didn't expect much. I think he maybe even expected it to fail, to be honest, because not many people at that time were building golf courses in remote areas. And so it was almost it. You know, if I thought it was going to become what it became, I'm not sure I would have taken the job. Would have been too big a job for me, honestly. But Mike made it seem, you know, doable. And of course, I had the support of Kemper Sports behind me. So it just seemed like a great opportunity. It was so beautiful when I first saw the property with Mike, and when I got to that point, you know, where 16 green and 17 tee are on Bandon Dunes, where now, you know, many people we know and friends and relatives have had their ashes spread, you know, you just knew it was something special, and just wanted to be a part of it.
Josh, it's become this soulful place for so many people, a must play for those who love this game. As you know, I won the fifth major championship, the Uncle Tony Invitational, held there 10 years ago at Bandon. The golf courses are the stars, but the food, the caddies, the cottages, everything just seems to work. How critical are kind of the outside components, even beyond the golf courses, to make everything this dream landscape that it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I think a few things. For one, it's just how natural and how naturally beautiful the place is, and the golf courses sit in this naturally beautiful setting. And then on top of that, the people in Bandon that are so excited to have all these people from, you know, at first it was just Oregon and then regionally and now nationally and now internationally, people from all over the world visiting their little town, which they never thought would happen. So I think that spirit of service and hospitality is just ingrained in the excitement of the local people that were excited to have everyone come from around the world to see Bandon. So I think you just feel this warm embrace there, both the nature and the people, and that combination just makes it unmatched.
When you think back to this point in time, 25 years ago, when did you start to get an inclination that you could be a part of something special here?
You know, as we started to have more and more people out to see it, I mean, even before we opened, the PGA Championship was at Sahali in 1998, and I had a group of friends come down from Golf Week and Golf Magazine. And, you know, these were well-traveled golf writers who had pretty much seen everything, both overseas and here in the States. And their reaction to it was pretty staggering, and they wrote an incredible article about it before we even opened. In March of 99, an article came out, and we debuted in the top 10 of their top 100 modern courses. And, you know, things like that were happening, and people's reaction to the golf course, you know, we still weren't sure that it made sense, but you started to hear people's reactions to the place and to the people and to the golf. And I think we slowly, both Mike and I, slowly realized this is pretty darn special.
Josh, you were so young in your career, and so was David McClay Kidd. We spoke to him yesterday, the designer of Bandon Dunes. I'm curious what your initial impressions were of David when you met him for the first time.
David, I wish I could have had some of David's confidence. I still wish I could have some of David's confidence. He, you know, he grew up the son of a superintendent. And so you'd think he'd have some humble beginnings, but he's really confident. And I think Mike saw some of that confidence in him. And what David knew about golf and what golf could be and what it could look like was everything from growing up as a superintendent's son in Scotland and True Links Golf. And I think that sort of combination with Mike's ability to work with the architects and work with artists is what led to our first golf course being so special. And David, you know, we were fast friends. We were the same age, and we both had moved a long way to get there. And he's just so fun to work with and was a very charismatic leader too. His team followed him. He was willing to push the envelope architecturally and kind of not do what we had been doing in America. He did have one or two American shapers that had worked on courses in America, and David led the charge to try and do things differently than we had been doing in America. And I think you can see the result. An example would be like the 13th fairway at Bandon Dunes and leaving all the dunes naturally and having a fairway that's just covered in natural dunes. It's very different from a lot of places you play in America.
Josh, I know the legacy is still being written at Bandon Dunes, but what do you think to this point the legacy is, and what do you think it could be?
Well, I mean, to me, since I got to work so closely with Mike Kaiser, I mean, I just feel like I had a front row seat to working with really the greatest golf developer of our time, of the last 100 years. I don't know exactly how to put it into words. I let you guys do that. You know, but, you know, one could say that all these great architects Mike has worked with, maybe they've built their best golf courses with Mike. And it says something about Mike Kaiser and working with Mike Kaiser and how he sort of brings the best out of people. He gets the most out of the land and working with the artist and even on the side of management and working with him. We can all learn so much from him in business. He's just been a great partner over the years. And to me, the legacy, you know, he wouldn't want it to be about him, but in large part it is about him. And then as far as the destination, it's just, you know, it's going to live on. The people, the Bandonistas are what make it so special. The people that love Bandon and can't get enough and either come back every year in the winter to play in our winter conditions and sort of our value season. And, you know, there was a time we thought we might close during the winter, and now it's sort of one of the busiest times of year. And so I think it's really about the people that work there, the people that visit there. And hopefully that continues on for, you know, another 25, 50, 100 years.
The Bandonistas. I'm going to have to get myself a T-shirt. Josh, Mike Kaiser's joining us tomorrow. I know you're headed out to Oregon. Safe travels as you celebrate 25 years of Bandon. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you both so much. Nice chatting with you guys.
Ryan, you got to work hard to get to Bandon Dunes. We've both made the trip. What do you remember?
Yeah, I feel like all of the great boondoggles that you can go on happen before kids.
Yes, same.
And I certainly had a great one in 2016. My boss, Jay Coffin, and I went to Bandon Dunes ahead of the 2016 NCAA Championship in Eugene. And it was just such an epic trip. Over 3.5 days. We played 103 holes, and you hear all the horror stories about the weather at Bandon Dunes. I think that's special in its own right. It was 65 degrees. It was sunny. It was light winds. It was just pure golf, my first and only experience there. I want to go back, obviously, but I also don't want to spoil what is a pretty great memory in my mind. I know, Damon, it's the 25-year anniversary of Bandon Dunes opening. It's also a very special anniversary for you as well. Tell the folks at home.
Well, the 10-year anniversary of one of the great wins in the history of our sport, the Uncle Tony Invitational. Matt Janella, a dear friend, had me out there, and I was able to get the victory. I still have the trophy prominently displayed in my home. It's the best stretch of golf that I've ever played. Made a couple of eagles that week. Broke 90 a couple times. That's the 10th at Pacific Dunes. Hit a little 4-iron there from 220 yards, a little 2-putt par.
High hands,
full extension. I'm thinking a little Colin Montgomery. Aren't you at home thinking the same thing? But really, it's just the entire experience. And David McClay Kidd talked about it yesterday. It's the giggles. It's the stories after the fact. It's just the gorgeous aspect of the golf course. And it's the comfort of the cottages. It's just everything seems to work. The clubhouse, not, you know, on the cliffs, but tucked away. So it's the golf that you walk down the hill for. It just, everything just flows there. And I haven't been back, but it's those memories that I'll hold forever, from the burgers to the birdies.
I mean, you and I have very similar friend groups where they're just diehard golf fans. And if they have never gone to Bandon Dunes, I cannot give it a high enough recommendation, because it is pure golf. It is just about golf. If you love golf, as the saying in other places go, you just have to go. But everything about it, from the dining experiences, the lodging, to the actual golf courses, which are so highly rated with all the rating systems. It can't be beat.
Good times. And tomorrow we speak to the founder, Mike Kaiser. Looking forward to it as we celebrate 25 years of Band and Dunes. So many have made the pilgrimage to the Oregon coast for the golf, the sunsets, the laughter. Dream golf. If you know, you know. In the fall, the President's Cup will return to the Royal Montreal Golf Club in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, September 24th to the 29th. The international team will be captained by Canadian Mike Weir, while Jim Furyk will lead the United States. Several President's Cup hopefuls in the field this week down at TPC Craig Ranch. Rex Hoggan rejoins. I understand you had a chance to catch up with one of them.
Damon, as you pointed out, it's 5 months until the President's Cup. That feels like a lifetime, but for many players in this week's field, it is first and foremost on their mind. One of them is the New Zealander, Ryan Fox. He came close to getting a captain's pick last time around. When I spoke with him this afternoon, he said after 2 years of playing almost exclusively on the PGA Tour, he's in a much better position to earn a spot this time around.
I've definitely grown up a bit as a player in the last couple of years. Obviously, it's been a pretty good couple of years in Europe for me, and I'm out here now, so that can only help. And I was disappointed to miss out a couple of years ago, but I've given myself another chance to get in this year, and hopefully can do it. But regardless, it's cool to just be on the radar for that. And if I can keep playing how I've done in Europe the last couple of years out here, I'm hopefully get the job done. And still a fair bit of work to do before that, though.
What would it mean to you to make that team that's going to play at Royal Montreal later this year? And have you had any conversations with Mike Weir, the captain?
Yeah, I've had a few conversations with Mike. I actually played with him down in New Zealand 18 months ago now as well, when he was down there on holiday, which was cool. And we've actually got a dinner tonight as well for the President's Cup. So it's nice to be included in all of those. And, it would be huge to make that team. I've sort of been on the outer a couple of times, obviously 2 years ago especially, and it's been a goal for a while to get there. And as I said, I've given myself a good chance so far, and hopefully can find some form for the rest of the year and play my way onto that team.
You mentioned spending pretty much the last 2 years playing halftime over here, halftime in Europe. What have you learned about yourself as a player?
Probably the biggest thing is that I can compete with the best guys in the world. I mean, you kind of always got to feel that as a player, but in the last couple of years, I've done it a few times now, and I think until you do it, I find it hard to believe it. And the last couple of years, I've definitely found it. I can start believing that now. My good golf can compete with the best guys.
And I wanted to go real quick to the Olympics. Right now, you're currently in that field, pretty comfortable. What would it mean to you, and why is it important to compete in the Olympics, represent New Zealand?
It's huge. I grew up in a sporting family. My mum's dad played cricket for New Zealand. My dad played for the All Blacks, and representing New Zealand was the highest honour. And while you kind of get to do that week in, week out on tour, making an Olympic team is kind of the pinnacle in that respect. And I've been lucky enough to do it a couple of times now in Rio and Tokyo, and would love to do it again this year. And we don't do it very often, and to play with the silver fern for us as our national emblem is amazing. And hopefully I can be in Paris in August.
International captain Mike Weir is here today at TPC Craig Ranch. He was walking with a couple of players, and he's going to host a dinner tonight for potential members of the team. And when I spoke to him about it, he said he expects to have about 16 players in that room. It'll be very similar to what he did at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. But he said the difference will be at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, it was a signature event, and that there was quite a few players in that field that weren't qualified and therefore didn't make that dinner. So he expects to see about 10 new faces tonight. And he said even if those players don't make this year's team, it'll be good for bonding for future teams. Damon?
Good stuff, Rex. Mike, we're looking to build some memories, some camaraderie ahead of September. On the other side of this break, we're joined by the reigning U.S. Women's Open champion, Allison Corpuz. Even if she went to USC, we'll let her on the show. She joins from Media Day. We look ahead to the next women's major of 2024. More on her hopes to defend when we return. Back on golf today. What a year it has been for the world number one, Nelly Korda. 5 straight wins on the LPGA Tour, including the Chevron Championship for a second career major title. We're going to talk about dominant, different grasses, formats, stroke play, match play, majors. She's become De Niro as Al Capone, untouchable. Let's take a look at some of the upcoming Women's Major Championship venues. Lancaster Country Club for the U.S. Women's Open. You got Sahali for the KPMG, where Brooke Henderson got the better of Lydia Ko back in the day. Evian Le Bon, of course, the old course at St. Andrews for the AIG Women's Open.
And it's great to be joined now by Allison. It's wonderful to see you. You just completed U.S. Women's Open Media Day in Lancaster Country Club. What did your day entail as you were reliving your heroics from 2023?
Yeah, I got to the course in the morning and just played three holes with Inti. I actually got to hear about her win in 2015, which was awesome. We played 15, 16, and 17, and then went inside, watched the USGA talk about, you know, the upcoming U.S. Women's Open and all of the strides that they've made in terms of advancing the purse. And, yeah, did a few interviews after that, and now I'm just relaxing at the hotel.
Pebble Beach and Lancaster, very, very different. What were your impressions of the golf course?
Yeah, like you said, definitely very different. The greens weren't as firm or as fast as I'm sure they will be in about a month, but it's beautiful out here, and everyone just talks about how great the community is and how we're going to be breaking spectator records, so I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good week.
Allison, when you think back to your win at Pebble in 2023, what prior experiences or results earlier in the year led you to believe that you could win a major championship?
Yeah, had a top three at Singapore early on in the year, and then played my way into the final group at Chevron last year, right before the U.S. Open, and didn't get it done at either of those experiences, but definitely got me a little more comfortable being in contention, and definitely helped me to win the U.S. Open.
Allison, Pebble Beach, one of those golf courses, the routing stays with you. What was the best shot you hit that week when you think back to winning the national championship?
Yeah, I definitely say the back nine, that final round on Sunday. 14, we actually laid it up a little further than I wanted, and it wasn't a super comfortable yardage for me, and just that shot in, making birdie on 14 and 15, I think, was when it started to settle in and that, you know, like I was going to win. So I'd say definitely that stretch coming in.
It's such a whirlwind in the immediate aftermath after winning a major championship, but in the hours or the days afterward, Allison, when did it start and how did it start to sink in what you'd actually accomplished?
Yeah, I played the week after, actually. I played the Dana Open following the win, and I think that was just a whirlwind of another week. It was just kind of like trying to get through the week, and then I had an off week after that, and that's really when I took some time to think about it and think about what had just happened. And I think just as more time passes and the more that people come up and congratulate me, even still, it's really awesome. And it still almost feels like some days it hasn't fully sank in yet.
Well, I imagine it's busy being the defending champ of the U.S. Women's Open. To boot, it's an Olympic year. You're currently fifth in the standings for the United States. Got to get into that top four, inside the top 15 in the Rolex World Rankings. How much is that on your mind? You want to get to Paris in a few months' time?
Yeah, it's definitely a big goal of mine. But at the same time, I mean, I'm really just grateful for the opportunities that I've had. And I mean, it is another Solheim year as well. So there's a lot to look forward to, and really just trying not to put too much pressure on myself and just keep doing what I've been doing.
It wouldn't be an interview these days if we did not ask about Nelly Korda. But Allison, you're in a unique position in that you partnered with Nelly at last year's Solheim Cup in the alternate shot format. What did you learn about her that week that led you to believe that something like this was possible, where she's now going for her sixth win in a row?
Yeah, no, it's awesome to see her just dominating recently. She's always been such a great player, and it just seems like she's really settled into her game. I mean, when we were partners, I was kind of joking to Jay, my caddy. We played alternate shot together, and I was just kind of saying, like, wow, I've never been this far up. Like, I've never had such short clubs into the greens. So I definitely think one of her biggest strengths is just how well she hits the golf ball. And then, I mean, she really doesn't have any weaknesses in her game. So it's no surprise that she's playing so well.
Another player with very few weaknesses, Sahith Theegala. His dad, Murli, is everywhere. I see him at almost every PGA Tour event that Saith is playing. But then there was Merlick cheering you on at Pebble Beach. I don't know if he has a twin or something, but how did the relationship happen between your family and Saith's family?
Yeah, so we actually met at the Junior Worlds when we were six in California, and then kind of reconnected. One of my best friends from college is actually pretty good family friends with him as well. So, I think it was just close enough. His dad drove up to come support me, and yeah, it was awesome to have him out there.
Also, in the wake of the U.S. Women's Open victory, former President Barack Obama tweeted at you or wrote on X that he was looking forward to a round with you. We got to follow up. Did you ever make it happen?
It has not happened yet, but I'm looking forward to the day that it does.
Oh, fantastic. If you need two more to join you, yeah. Ryan and I have happily fill out the foursome. Congrats on last year's win. Best luck on your title defense. We hope to speak to you sometime down the road.
Thank you.
And here is the aforementioned shout out from 44. Damon, I can't pretend to know how it works from here. Like, I don't think you send him a DM. Like, do you just, like, cold email his director of communications? I'm not sure the method involved, but I feel like they got to make this happen.
You got to shout it out to the rafters one way or another, and I hope she takes us up on the offer to fill out the foursome.
Yes.
I'll work on my short game. I'll be ready.
Yeah, a two-ball will be a little bit boring. Just fill it out with four.
We'll do foursomes. We'll do, you know, alternate shots. Alternate shot. a lot of fun. All right, folks. Lots of great LPGA events coming up. The Cognizant Founders Cup, that's in New Jersey. Nelly Korda expected to play and go for six straight wins. Mizuho America's Open follows in the U.S. Women's Open presented by Ally Lancaster Country Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. How about an Epson Tour update? That's the road to the LPGA. Juliana Hung took home the title over the weekend at the IOA Championship. 21 under total is the lowest 54-hole score in IOA Championship history. She's 22 years of age, a rookie this year, won six times on the Taiwan LPGA Tour.
And what a weekend it was in New Orleans for good friends Roy McIlroy and Shane Lowry. Rory now with clean 25 PGA Tour wins, but it may have been even more important for Shane Lowry. We discuss his big momentum push coming up next.
We're back on Golf Today. Let's take a look at the signature event winners so far in 2024. You see Chris Kirk, Wyndham Clark at that rain-shortened Pebble. Oh, Hideki Matsuyama, Genesis. There's Scotty Scheffler. How about, the number one player in the world just ain't quitting. Four wins in the last five starts, including a couple signature wins. There you see the remaining signature events coming up. Wells Fargo, you got Memorial Tournament and the Travelers Championship as well. Lots of big-time events, the best players in the world side by side. Take you back to the Corrales Punta Cana Championship earlier this month. Billy Horschel, a 9-under 63 in the final round, win by a couple of shots to pick up his eighth career PGA Tour win. And with the win on Sunday, Horschel earned that entry in the 2024 PGA Championship and 2025 Players, among other events. And thanks to that win, remains atop the Aon Swing 5, as you see. The Aon Swing 5 will include the top five FedEx Cup points earners not already exempt from the swings of full field events leading up to each signature event.
And this past weekend was certainly an important one for Roy McIlroy and Shane Lowry. The duo got the win at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And even though Roy probably doesn't have to worry about this for the next decade, thanks to the victory, Shane Lowry moved from number 14 to number 3 in the Aon Next 10. Speaking of which, the Aon Next 10 represents the top 10 players not already exempt from the FedEx Cup standings. In other words, if you stay in here, you are about to live very profitably.
You're right. Important pathways, a little tension mid-season. Love to see it. Hey, you want to watch the CJ Cup? Byron Nelson, here's how you can do it. You got Golf Channel and Peacock. Thursday and Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Moves over to 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday and Sunday. Golf Channel and Peacock. Folks, Tommy Fleetwood's longtime caddy, Ian Finnis, is recovering from open heart surgery. He announced Tuesday on social media. Finnis had been out since the Valero Texas Open the week prior to the Masters and didn't caddy for Fleetwood at Augusta National. Finnis and Fleetwood, friends since their teenage years growing up in Southport, England, have been working together since 2016. Fleetwood has six DP World Tour victories with Finis on the bag, most recently the Dubai Invitational in January. Finis's Instagram post on Tuesday read, "Open heart surgery done." He said on social media, "Massive thanks to all at the NHS staff. The road to recovery has started. Thanks for all the love. Best wishes to Ian." Tell you, Lav, covered a lot of ground today. We started the show talking about Will Zalatoris and this flare-up and withdrawal from the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson.
Yeah, I don't think you can help but be a little bit bummed, you know, by that news. He described it as a flare-up, as you mentioned. His performance coach, Josh Gregory, said that it's nothing serious. But I think you just hope that he can get right. He's just 27 years old. He's clearly a massive talent. But I think he can be so important for the PGA Tour with his voice as well. He's such a smart kid. You just hope that he can put it all together and put these injuries woes behind him.
As to the two players who love being PGA Tour pros more than anybody, Will Zalatoris and Seth Thigala.
Yeah.
You like those two, you agree?
I like those two. I'll throw Justin Thomas in there as well.
Make it a threesome. This is a lot of fun. We're back tomorrow at 3. Enjoy the golf from Frisco, Texas.